From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action, and it is my privilege to be sitting in for Tony today. Well, this is a first for me. I will be talking to a guest live from Italy. So yes, FRC is indeed around the world. Peter Sprigg, the Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at Family Research Council, is also today's gentleman from Verona. He just presented an important paper at the 13th World Congress of Families, and his paper is entitled Evidence Shows Sexual Orientation Can Change, Debunking the Myth of Immutability. We might also get the dish on what good food he's had in these past few days. In my second segment, I will talk to Janique Stewart. She is a Black pro-life Christian speaker who was disinvited from a Cornell University debate on abortion. They told her that having someone on campus who affirmed a biblical worldview about sexuality was tantamount to, get this, allowing to let a racist speak who held pro-slavery and pro-Holocaust views. At the bottom of the hour, I'll talk to Michael Loftus, a conservative comedian with a comedy group dubbed The Deplorables, which will be performing tonight in Portland, Oregon, of all places. A Washington Times columnist wrote about their team. It's about time for a voice or two to arise and take on the Jimmy Kimmels, the Kathy Griffins, the Samantha Bees, and the SNL types of the comedy world, and he is just the man to do it. And in our last segment, I'll talk about an 85-year-old peaceful pro-lifer who was attacked by a pro-abortionist in San Francisco right in front of a Planned Parenthood abortion mill. Sean Carney, CEO of the 40 Days for Life ministry, joins me to talk about that incident and the national debut tonight of the pro-life movie Unplanned across the nation. As a reminder, you can visit our podcast site, TonyPerkins.com, and follow Tony on Twitter, at T. Perkins. You can also follow me, if you're so inclined, at Sarah P. Perry. Well, the 13th Annual World Congress of Families is going on right now in beautiful Italy, and our own Peter Sprigg, Senior Fellow for Policy Studies at FRC, just presented his brand new paper there. It's entitled Evidence Shows Sexual Orientation Can Change, Debunking the Myth of Immutability. He joins us live from Italy tonight, where it is 10 p.m. local time. Needless to say, I'm sure it has been for Peter a quite long day. Peter, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Sarah. It's great to be with you.
Okay, so let me go right to the important stuff. What have you had to eat that's been spectacular so far?
Well, I'm glad you didn't ask me that earlier, but we just had a welcome dinner tonight that had several courses. It had risotto and fusellini, I think, was the pasta that we had, and it was quite a delicious three-course meal. Unfortunately, I had to leave before the tiramisu and espresso in order to get back to my hotel room for this interview.
Well, so you made a worthwhile sacrifice, because now we're going to talk about your more important effort that spans beyond what the great food in Italy is, and that's the paper that you just presented at the World Congress of Families. And I want to talk a little bit about something that has been accepted as fact, but according to your research and the research of others, may actually have been misrepresented and is sort of unspoken about. This is a characteristic that many of us, I think, for a very long time, based on Supreme Court precedent and sort of that ongoing liberal narrative, believed was not subject to change. And that's the notion of sexual orientation. And you write that many of the advances of the homosexual movement have been based upon this claim of immutability. And Justice Anthony Kennedy's majority opinion in Obergefell, as we know, used that basis to redefine marriage to include same-sex couples, resting on precisely that assertion. So, cut to the chase for us here. Is sexual orientation immutable or unchangeable?
No, it is most certainly not. And even I was surprised at the amount of evidence, the amount of social science research that I found, which shows that, in fact, sexual orientation can change. And I want to mention that that this is not I'm not talking about studies of sexual orientation change efforts. In other words, we're not talking about the therapy that some people undertake to change their sexual orientation. This is just research on sexuality in general that has shown that people can change over time. It doesn't cover why or how they change. It just documents that they change. However, I think it does have relevance to the debates over the therapy bans that have been promoted in some states and now I think in some other countries as well, because in part those have been based on this notion that, you know, well, sexual orientation can't change. We all know that. So if you claim you can change it, then you're committing fraud. And that case is really undermined by this evidence. But what I look at in this paper is four major research studies that have been done within the last 20 years or so that are representative surveys. In other words, they have a sample that is representative of the national population. It's not what we call a convenience sample where you're just asking people from, say, LGBT magazines to volunteer to be part of a study. These are representative studies, and they are longitudinal. Now, what that means is that you have a body of people, you have a group of people who are taking this survey over and over at different time intervals. Like, they'll take it once, and then 6 years later, they take the same survey again, they answer the same questions, and we look and see if they give different answers. And there are four of these studies that have those qualities, which are important for really high-quality social science research. And three of them have been done in the United States, one in New Zealand. And they all show that sexual orientation can change, that the different elements of sexual orientation, behavior, attractions, behaviors, and identity, all can change over time, and also all can be inconsistent with each other. So that's something that a lot of people don't really realize.
Well, and that actually was something about your study I found particularly compelling. So the American Psychological Association defines sexual orientation as a function of these three distinct elements, and you mentioned them, but they are attraction, behavior, and personal identity. So is there a relationship between these three intersecting components, which you lay out in a very compelling Venn diagram here in your paper, the interaction of these elements and whether or not those particular elements can, one apart from another, change over time to essentially affect the whole? In other words, not meet the APA's definition.
Well, yeah, so this is important, too, as a sort of groundwork for this paper, is this concept of these elements of sexual orientation, that sexual orientation is not one thing. It's actually three different things, the attractions, behavior, and identity. And those three elements of sexual orientation are not always what we call congruent. That means they don't always necessarily match each other in the individual at one time. A person may have same-sex attractions, but may have sexual partners of both sexes and may actually identify as straight, for example, rather than as homosexual. So they may not be consistent. That Venn diagram you mentioned, it takes people from a large 1994 U.S. survey, and anyone who expressed any same-sex sexuality on any of those three dimensions was compared with each other, and they did a Venn diagram as to which ones matched up in terms of the attractions, behavior, and identity. And I think it was only 15% of the women with some same-sex sexuality, and only 24% of the men actually had all three of those elements. So you see that congruence is not
I'm very interested about the research that you cite from two individual scholars. One is Lisa Diamond and the other is Clifford Roski, and they would consider themselves to be pro-LGBT. And in fact, Lisa herself, who is a professor of the University of Utah, identifies as a lesbian, even wrote an entire book called Sexual Fluidity, actually are quoted in your paper and in their own research as saying that the culture should abandon the immutability argument once and for all. Did that surprise you at all? So my belief in terms of this research is that there may be some congruence between what we see in terms of the identification of those in the transgender movement who may have been born one particular way but come to a secondary conclusion later in life, and how they argue for the fact that that particular gender identity is not immutable, but rather changeable. And we are seeing now that the evidence supports the exact corollary in the sexual orientation segment. So we are seeing changeability that affects all aspects of this LGBTQ paradigm, this agenda that has laid itself for so long into the cultural sphere by virtue of the fact that these are unchanging characteristics. And yet, the American Psychological Association recognizes distinct moving pieces that, when they are segmented out individually, still give us an opportunity to recognize that there is an element of change here. So Peter goes on to quote some of the research from Paul McHugh, for example, who was a psychiatrist who said that sexual orientation can and does change over time, and continues with the work of Lisa Diamond and Clifford Roski in their 2016 article, Scrutinizing Immutability, noting that rates of change from any same-sex attractions at the first assessment to the second range from between 13% to a high of 53%. So this is a cross-section over a period of time, indicating that these individuals are representing different facets of these three characteristics pegged by the APA. So if listeners out there would like to read more of Peter's paper, the 22-page paper entitled Evidence Shows Sexual Orientation Can Change, Debunking the Myth of Immutability, go to TonyPerkins.com. Look under the link for today's show. You are listening to Washington Watch. I am Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action. Coming up next, I will talk to a Black pro-life Christian speaker who was disinvited from a Cornell University debate on abortion for her beliefs on an entirely separate issue. Stay tuned.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action, sitting in for Tony Perkins today. Janique Stewart, a pro-life speaker with the Life Training Institute and the founder of the ministry Love Protects, was invited to speak at an abortion debate at Cornell University. And everything was set to go off without a hitch until she was disinvited when the organizers realized she believes in, gasp, the traditional Christian teachings on sexuality and marriage. Janique, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
So I want to get a little bit of background here. You were invited on April 23rd to come speak at Cornell University, their political union abortion speech. And this was a debate at which there were pro and anti-abortion perspectives being presented. And this is entirely without consequence until they objected to two of your beliefs. What on earth did you say in your bio that scared them away?
Well, actually, it wasn't even in my bio. It was actually when they began to Google and research my name. It was actually explained to me in a phone call and several subsequent phone calls that the executive board took issue with the two core beliefs that you mentioned, that sex should be reserved for the marriage covenant and that marriage designed by our Creator God is a union of one man and one woman. So because in my past and because I openly advocate for those beliefs and speak on those issues, they took issue with that and they disinvited me. And it was very clear because of my views, which is a form of viewpoint discrimination.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but the whole notion of having a debate, right, is a difference of opinion, right? So we're not even talking about the issue that is fundamental to the nature of the discussion that you were getting ready to have, but rather something, a belief that you held on an entirely separate issue, and this was enough to apparently disinvite you.
Yes, that's exactly that. That's very correct. I was actually quite shocked because I thought, I'm not even there to even speak to the issue of marriage or sex, you know, specifically premarital sex. I'm there to speak on the topic of abortion for 30 minutes. And then afterwards, the political union members have their own debate with regards to what I said, and then they vote. So I thought, I cannot believe this, but I kept asking, are you sure? Why am I being disinvited? Are you sure that's the reason? And it was quite clear that that actually was the reason. It was because of my conservative Christian views.
And this is apparently tantamount, you explain in an article recently for PJ Media, tantamount to holding pro-slavery and pro-Holocaust views. Am I reading that right?
In a conversation that I did have, that was explained to me that that is how either the board members felt themselves or later the individual changed it to that that is what the board members felt, that the audience members or the students, that's how they might perceive it to be, that my views, my biblical worldview would be compared to some form of bigotry. Yes.
Okay,
which is
so
very offensive. And number one, it's just flat out inaccurate. And of course it is offensive. And, you know, I was very disappointed that anyone would think that in any way, or that they would automatically assume that students would also come to that same conclusion.
And indeed, the chronology on this was that you were then re-invited and then disinvited for a second time. So explain that whole hiccup to us.
So when I was told in that phone call that they were disinviting me because of my views, I made it very clear. I said, you need to go back to them and make it clear that that's wrong to disinvite someone because of their views. They can't do that. That's wrong. And make it very clear to them that they're disinviting me simply because of my conservative Christian views. So the individual did go back, and a couple of weeks passed, and they said, fine, listen, we're not going to outright disinvite you. However, we would prefer another individual from the Life Training Institute who does not hold those views or has not spoken to those views at any time in the past.
So, and in other words, said, well, disinvited again.
Yes. Well, they said, hey, we'll let you speak, but we'd rather someone else speak. But since they clearly said we're not going to disinvite you, then I said, fine, then I'm speaking. And then that was set. And then for about 3 weeks, there was no word. And then suddenly I got a phone call last week that this time we're disinviting you and it's final. And again, it was because of my views.
So the Cornell Political Union told the College Fix that it did not attack your views, but merely decided that you were so controversial a speaker that hosting you would spark violent protests and require extensive security fees. Now, let me say for the listeners who are taking this all in, Janique is a former beauty queen. She is about as big as a minute. So let me tell you that this is an individual who does not present an imposing physical presence, but rather the notion was that there would be such outcry to your presence simply for holding a belief that they did not even trust your being there for the safety of other students. So this is really thought policing, isn't it?
Yes, ultimately, it really is that they find my views to be offensive. And what you just read, that was, I believe, presented in the College Fix. But recently, a board member resigned, an executive board member resigned, and he wrote in an open post in Guest Room that this was a decision made primarily due to Ms. Stewart's beliefs. And the fact that CPU's claim that her invitation was rescinded to avoid security fees is misleading. There was no indication that our event would be protested, and no security assessment ever concluded that the event would require protection. He then went on to say, and to chalk up her belief to mere bigotry is a fundamental misunderstanding of Christian teaching and dismissive to millions of Christians who share her beliefs.
Janique Stewart has been my guest today. Visit the website for her ministry, loveprotects.com. Janique, thank you for being on Washington Watch today. Coming up next, I'll be talking to Michael Loftus, a conservative comedian with a comedy troupe dubbed The Deplorables. They are performing tonight in Portland, of all places, and they won't know what hit them. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Jerry, what are you doing?
What? What does it look like I'm doing? I'm sitting on this bench enjoying my tea and reading the news.
You always tell me that I need to stand firm for faith, family, and freedom. Why aren't you standing?
Well, now with this new Stand Firm app, I can sit and stand at the same time. And if you got the Stand Firm app, you could learn something besides that garbage of peddling in public schools. You could listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, where Tony and leaders on the Hill and other culture influencers weigh in on current events. You can read FRC's latest publications and articles responding to what's going on in the news, like this.
Oh.
You can play trivia and earn points for free prizes. You can even access all of FRC's publications directly to sharpen your mind and give you the ability to discern the thoughts and intentions of the heart.
I can be a mind reader?
Kid, that's from the Bible, the richest piece of literature on God's green earth.
Can I see this stand up? Wow, this would keep me informed. Visit frc.org/app to download FRC's Stand Firm app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action. I am sitting in for Tony Perkins tonight. As a reminder, go to TonyPerkins.com for more information about any of the guests and sources that we cite here. Follow Tony at T. Perkins on Twitter. Follow me as well at Sarah P. Perry. I'm particularly excited about my next guest because for many reasons, he is sharp, but he is also funny, and he is showing that you can be conservative and funny at the same time. His conservative comedy troupe called The Deplorables will be taking the stage in Portland, Oregon tonight, so they need to buckle up. It should be interesting considering the liberal town is a normal pit stop for the likes of Kathy Griffin and Bill Maher. The Deplorables, as you remember, was in a reference to Hillary Clinton's famous comment when she called half of Trump's supporters in 2016 a basket of deplorables. So why not embrace the name? Michael Loftus is a regular Fox contributor and a stand-up comic, is part of the Deplorables comedy troupe, and joins me now. Welcome to Washington Watch, Michael.
I don't even want to talk. I just want to let you keep talking about me. That was fantastic.
Can you tell I'm a fan?
I'm not going to get any better than that. You keep going.
Okay.
I was born in a log cabin. I once had to carry a book 10 miles to return.
There you go. I bet it was barefoot also.
Yes, it was in the snow.
So let me talk a little bit about this comedy tour. First of all, how timely, how desperately needed, but it's been described as a comedy rally for conservatives and good old American deplorables. So this is a politically charged variety show. Can you tell me a little bit about some of the people who are involved in this troupe?
Okay. It really is an all-star cast. It's heavy hitters. We got my good friend Steve McGrew, who I know him from back in the day of stand-up comedy. He's just an amazing talent. He got taken away from comedy clubs when he entered the world of radio a few years ago. But now I got him back on stage where he belongs. I got my buddy Brian Hayner, one of the top. He's an insane guitar talent. He's played on a lot of hit records you probably have listened to in your car. He's also an insanely talented comedian. So you put music and comedy together with that guy, it's off the charts. Then there's these three girls from Texas who I met, the Deplorable Choir. This is what I love about the internet and YouTube. They just started recording these, like, pro-Trump songs in their living room in Houston. They're getting millions of hits. They have a huge fan base. They're the nicest girls on the planet. And then we've got my buddy Terrence K. Williams, who's kind of a YouTube sensation, internet sensation as well. And Officer Brandon Tatum is with us. So you've got great comedy. You've got music. You're singing along. You're laughing at the left. We are roasting them up one side and down the other. And then you've got, you know, some great, like, testimonials of people who have not had the best upbringing, but they didn't feel bad for themselves. The American dream is alive and well, and I would say stronger than ever, no matter what the left wants us to believe. We're doing great.
What kind of reception are you getting in liberal towns? You say, okay, Portland tonight, and of course everyone's stomach flips who happens to vote red as opposed to blue because we think, oh no, we know about Portland. Are you at all concerned about the kind of reception that you'll get, and how has the reception been in other similarly liberal cities?
It's too funny. I got a streetcar going by me. I'm going, like, literally down in downtown Portland. Let's take Albany, New York. Really great show. A ton of people showed up. You go to any liberal city, like San Francisco or Los Angeles, you don't have to drive too far outside of city limits where you start finding conservatives. And, you know, there's a ton of conservatives in San Francisco. They just keep their head down and they lay low. So a ton of conservatives came out in Albany, and these people were like, thank you for coming. They're like apologizing. We're sorry our town's so liberal. I'm like, it's okay. You like it here. You're allowed to live where you want to live.
How interesting that one of the themes of the 2016 elections was really how out of touch the coastal elites were with the rest of mainstream America. And what we're seeing, even in the tour towns themselves, are individuals who are saying, listen, you know, the city, it's one thing, but the rest of us, you know, we're okay. We understand that he's doing a great job, and we want to hear somebody talk about it. So
exactly.
Let me tell you, I am so impressed, and we are here, at the way that the left of the media, though they have demonized the president, though they have had a stranglehold on comedy, you've provided an opportunity for people to be funny and conservative at the same time. We need more like you, Michael Loftus. So I love the way that this tour recaptures the culture for good. And is that part of your plan through this entire tour?
Yeah, you have to go to these places. A lot of people, I remember when Trump was going to a lot of these towns, a lot of the pundits would go, well, he's wasting his time going there. There's no, that's a great thing. Listen, I firmly believe our message is the best message. I firmly believe that individual responsibility is the way to go. And if that doesn't play in Portland, then forget it. We're done as a nation.
I fully agree. Michael Loftus has been my guest today. Go to deplorableshow.com to find out where you can get tickets and where you can see the show. You are listening to Washington Watch. Joining me next is Sean Carney, CEO of 40 Days for Life, to talk about the national pro-life movement and the movie Unplanned, debuting tonight.
Picture it. Majestic beauty all around you. Wildlife, deep blue waters, glacial mountains, lush forests. Can you imagine the majesty of creation at every turn? Discover Alaska with FRC. You'll enjoy every moment of this unforgettable experience. Juno, accessible only by sea and air. Ketchikan and its impressive collection of Native American totem poles. Glacier Bay, a breathtaking wonder. All this, plus a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital. You'll hear directly from FRC President Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, and Michelle Bachmann. This is no ordinary vacation. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Be rejuvenated as we deepen our relationships with God and each other. Don't just get away. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise, July 7th through 14th. Call 844-872-5155 to register today or visit us online at frc.org/Alaska.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm Sarah Perry, Director of Partnerships for FRC Action, sitting in for Tony today. Well, I'll be addressing two topics relative to the pro-life movement in my final segment today. First, I'm going to talk about a story that took place on March 19th. An 85-year-old peaceful pro-life demonstrator named Ron was violently attacked as he prayed outside a Planned Parenthood abortion clinic in San Francisco, California. The entire thing was captured on video and posted to YouTube by the Life Legal Defense Foundation. Let me tell you, you may look for it. It is also very difficult to watch. And second, and importantly, the pro-life movie Unplanned debuts across the nation tonight, and you can watch the trailer and find a theater near you playing the movie at the website unplannedfilm.com. That's unplannedfilm.com. Here to join me and talk about both issues is Sean Carney, president and CEO of 40 Days for Life. Sean, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's good to be back. Thank you, Sarah.
So, Sean, I have watched this video, and it's a brief clip. It's about 23 seconds long of an 85-year-old man getting pushed to the ground and getting kicked multiple times, and it is truly gut-wrenching to watch this. So can you explain to us, sort of put this in context, why was he outside the Planned Parenthood clinic in San Francisco in the first place?
Well, Ron is a wonderful soul. He's 85 years old. He is the local 40 Days for Life leader in San Francisco and has been for many years. And so many of the employees at Planned Parenthood know him. Many of the people in the neighborhood know him. Everybody loves Ron. I've visited that campaign many times. And you know, we hold peaceful 40-day vigils outside of abortion facilities across the country. And his is in San Francisco, and this thug came by earlier in the day and cut down his sign and tried to steal it, but ran off. You know, he just cut down the sign and attempted to take his – it's just a 40 Days for Life sign. It says, pray to end abortion. And then he came back, and that's what people see in the video. Ron is trying to get his banner – and stop this guy from running off with his 40 Days for Life banner. And the guy gets him on the ground and violently kicks him in the head and yells at him, "Stay down, old man." And Ron is literally 85. I mean, he could have killed him. And we have gotten wonderful coverage from you guys in the National Review and Fox News. Donald Trump Jr. tweeted out the video saying, "Help us find this guy." But, you know, he belongs in the penitentiary for sure.
Now, explain to me the comment that you made, which I believe is fully apropos, that San Francisco's tolerance, the fact that it's a tolerant city, is a joke. Explain to me, as somebody who has full experience with what is often an unpopular opinion, how you understand this and what you meant by that statement.
Oh, I meant just that. It is a joke. You know, we've had 40 Days for Life campaigns. California is the largest state for 40 Days for Life. We usually have 8 or 9 campaigns in the Bay Area. And this is not just anti-pro-life or pro-abortion, if you're on the other side. What this guy did is un-American. I mean, America, no matter if you're liberal, you're conservative, you love abortion, you hate abortion, that's irrelevant. We all have a right to stand out, use our freedom of speech that so many sacrificed so that we could have, and share our opinion without harm, without harm. And, you know, the idea that San Francisco is the most tolerant city in the world and welcomes all people and all viewpoints and wants everybody to coexist is insane. And we see it at the West Coast Walk for Life every year. We've seen it at 40 Days for Life. Although we have never seen this, and we have never had a volunteer attack like this, ever, ever. And so it is definitely a first for us, and we have had thousands of campaigns in 816 cities in 56 different countries, and so, you know, for 12 years. So it's really unprecedented for us, and for it to happen in San Francisco is shameful, because it is completely it is a joke that they claim to be tolerant.
Now, I find it interesting. We've talked about this before on the show, that University of California, Berkeley, of course, the hotbed, the birthplace of the free speech movement, and really so many in California find themselves very comfortable with the self-description of open-mindedness, right, and tolerance. We're seeing sort of an uptick overall in all socially conservative issues. And who would have thought decades ago that orthodox perspectives on things like the sanctity of life or human sexuality would be something that we would see so much animus over? But 40 Days of Life particularly has sort of made a name for itself, not only because of the success of the ministry, but because you all are quiet, peaceful, law-abiding demonstrators. And there was a period of time closer to Roe versus Wade when I think a lot of people automatically assumed that there was an element of violence or harassment or gory pictures that were associated with the pro-life movement. But 40 Days for Life really has sort of distinguished itself within a completely different context, hasn't it?
Yeah, and just like you said, we are law-abiding. We are peaceful. Our volunteers have had 800,000 people participate. They sign a statement of peace saying not only that they will be law-abiding, but they will be Christ-like. And so there's a standard there. And frankly, that's why I think we haven't had an incident like this. I mean, in some ways, I guess it's amazing that nothing like this has happened in 12 years, considering the state of our culture. But I think the approach that we have is the reason why it's not combative. You know, people that disagree with us, you know, the worst thing they'll do is yell a curse word or give us a middle finger or something, but never violence. This is definitely a first. And I think, like you said, that makes 40 Days for Life really stand out. It has been approachable for a lot of people. 25% of 40 Days for Life local campaigns are run by women who have had an abortion, one of my favorite statistics. So, you know, this is about, you know, heart, mind, and soul. And I believe what you said, which is, you know, it seems now that the abortion issue and the family issue, marriage issue, sexuality is, you know, if you're against us, then you're a bigot. And that's the great work that you guys do, because we have had such a destruction of the family. And the result of that is there's a lot of hurting people. And whether they're seeking abortions or whether they're angry, whatever it is, this is such a hot button issue for them. And that should really make us, you know, not get frustrated, but step up to the plate and to offer love and healing and other alternatives, in our case, being outside of abortion facilities.
How many cities host a 40 Days for Life event or a demonstration of any sort?
We have two campaigns a year, the fall and the spring. And right now we have the largest spring campaign we've ever had, 377 cities.
Wow. And you find yourself in the venues, obviously, I would imagine, where you have connection to these abortion clinics, because 40 Days for Life makes it a point to place themselves where people are in need. So have there been any markets in which you find yourself as a national leader of this ministry a little fearful to step foot in?
No. You know, and before, I know Ron. He is a good man, and we've known him a long time. And for this to happen, I mean, I know all of our leaders, but I know him well, and it breaks my heart to see that video. But people need to know, if they watch it, he is okay, and he's recovering. But we have been in South Bronx, we've been all throughout California, we're in London, we're in Croatia. We're in Bogota, where Colombia, where they have 80 abortion facilities in a 2-square-mile radius.
Oh, wow.
So there are most 40 Days for Life locations. They're safe. All of our local leaders, we work with the police. One of the great things about what's going on in San Francisco, we have long established relationships with local law enforcement at all of our vigils. And you know, so it is safe, but we're in dangerous areas. There are definitely dangerous areas, because that's where the abortion industry often builds. And so we go where the abortion facilities are. And I have been to that San Francisco location many times. There is no way, I would assume, that we'd ever have an incident there. It's in a very pleasant neighborhood in San Francisco. It's next to a Burger King, where the manager is very generous about parking and using the restroom and all that good stuff. You would not assume that this would happen in this nice neighborhood in San Francisco. And so I guess today I'm saying it's obviously unpredictable. You can't look at an area and say, well, that's dangerous and that's not, for a 40 Days for Life campaign after this incident.
I want to pivot to the new pro-life movie, Unplanned, and it makes its national debut tonight on 1,000 screens nationwide. And as many of our listeners know, it's about Abby Johnson, who was herself a former Planned Parenthood abortion clinic director in College Station, Texas, and actually oversaw 22,000 abortions in 8 years before she quit and became a pro-life advocate. So the tagline for this movie is, she saw something that changed everything. Can you tell us what Abby Johnson saw?
Yeah, Abby Johnson saw a 13-week-old baby boy fight for his life and lose it on an ultrasound monitor when she was asked for the first time to assist with an ultrasound-guided abortion. And Abby Johnson's facility is the same facility where 40 Days for Life started. My office. I knew her for 8 years when she worked at Planned Parenthood. She was the 2008 Employee of the Year for Planned Parenthood. And these gentlemen who wrote God's Not Dead, Chuck Konzelman and Carrie Solomon, called me about 4 years ago and started writing this movie. And we've done a lot of work with them. We had 300 screens for our local 40 Days for Life leaders across the country last night. So about 40,000 people saw the movie last night. And it is so well done. You've got to go see this. Every American, if you support abortion, you got to see it. If you're pro-life, you certainly need to see it. Everybody needs to see it. There is no movie like Unplanned. There just is no movie like Unplanned. It's the largest opening of any Christian movie ever. It's had the largest pre-purchase of theaters than any movie ever, including The Passion and God's Not Dead. Mm. It just has so much momentum behind it. And how obvious is it to say, what a time in America for this movie to come out? I mean, we need this movie like the crops need the rain. We are justifying and advocating for infanticide right now. And this is a beautiful story of family, of the heart, and of abortion. And it is the best education on abortion anybody will have. And it's also entertaining. It's a good movie. They did a very good job at giving the weight that the topic deserves, but in a very compelling story.
And your group was literally praying and picketing outside Abby's clinic location for years. I found this surprising. I did not realize, and maybe others don't as well, that the relationship with Abby Johnson herself was a longstanding one. So how would you have described your relationship with Abby Johnson leading up to the moment where she decides she is changing her mind on abortion?
Well, she was my friend and my enemy. I mean, we volunteered for opposing organizations at the same time, which is in the movie. We became directors of opposing organizations, often did media and radio interviews against one another's points. But we always said, yes, we're there praying for the babies. Yes, we're there offering alternatives for the women, but we are also there for the workers. And they would sit out and listen to our talks. They would come out and turn on the sprinklers and set off car alarms and try to disrupt. But we always noticed they were listening. And Abby had the humility on October 5th of 2009 to walk into my office right next door where we would offer free pregnancy tests. So we were next door and never imagined that the director would walk in and have a change of heart. And they cover all of that in the movie. It's very well done. They cover about a 10-year time period of Abby's transition in and out of the abortion industry.
And when she walks into your office and sits down, what does Abby Johnson say to you?
Well, I leaned in and I said she was just crying. I'll never forget seeing her security card covered in mascara because I had seen her swipe that security card hundreds of times. And I said, it looks like you've had a tough day at the office. And she kind of laughed and said, you could say that. And I sat there and I listened, and she described what she saw. And I knew she was changed. The fact that I had known her for 8 years was a tremendous grace. Because I'm sure anybody else would have been tempted not to believe her.
And Sean, an incredible testament to how God has worked in your life specifically to use you as the vehicle for a message of hope for an individual who up to that point had never had a doubt about what she was doing being the right thing to advocate for women. We are encouraging everyone we know to go out and see Unplanned Film. Visit unplannedfilm.com. You've been listening to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. As a reminder, go to our podcast, tonyperkins.com. Follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins, and you can find me as well at Sarah P. Perry. We'll talk to you next time.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit tonyperkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.